You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
Fat ass. The woman in the next cubicle, fat ass. The man on the train, fat ass. The director of the nonprofit where I work, though always dieting, fat ass and a bitch. Me and my fourth cookie, fat ass. My mom in her chair, fat ass. My dad in his chair reclining, fat ass. And my sister, that she'll never forgive me. Jeremy, Annie, Brian, Lois, Chip, Jan, Nancy, David Groff, and David Trinidad, all fat asses. My editor, fat ass. The employees of my publishing company, if I still have one, every single one of them, a fat ass. Louise Glick, Ted Kuser, Charles Simic, fat ass, fat ass, fat ass. Robert Pinsky, Rita Dove, Billy Collins, fat ass, really, really fat ass. David Lehman, best American fat ass. Jesus fat ass, the devil fat ass, the fat ass Pope in his extra big fat ass robe.
And for our last ever podcast, I guess, she's Stacy Waite.
And he's Scott Winter, and you just heard the poet Aaron Smith reading the poem Fat Ass from his Lambda-nominated collection of poetry called Appetite.
And in case you're wondering if Smith just called a list of poet laureates fat asses, that's indeed what he did.
On today's episode, we're talking to poets Aaron Smith, Ray McManus, and Alan Michael Parker, who have some really surprising ways of writing about poetry. And here's a little bit of what Aaron Smith had to say about his impulse to do things he's not supposed to do. About his impulse to do things he's not supposed to do.
I do think there's a part of me, I've always been the person, if you say, you can't put your coat on the floor, then I'm going to put my coat on the floor. If somebody says, you know, you can't do that, then I always try to do it. You know, growing up, I grew up, you know, very conservative, fundamentalist Christian, and so many things were prohibited. And I think a lot of my work is sort of a resistance to that, me saying that, you know, this particular space is protected from this particular content. I've really been interested in the idea of public space and about how we're so interested in policing what gets said in a public format. But I really feel like whenever we're protecting public space, we're usually just sort of protecting it for the people who oppress people. The person who usually gets hurt is the person who has the story to tell or the person who may be disenfranchised.
We're going to play you one more Aaron Smith poem, a poem from his book Blue on Blue Ground, a poem he calls Ars Poetica, though of course he's working a little bit in the face of tradition.
We don't need more poems about blowjobs, a friend told me recently. There are too many as it is. I said, do you mean we don't need more poems by gay men about blowjobs? Or blowjobs in general. I needed to know if she was anti-gay or anti-penis. Well, just because you can talk about something doesn't mean you should, she said. You should want your poems to be relevant to a larger community. Do you want your writing to be read only by your peers? Or do you want it to last, for people like Billy Collins to read your poems? I said, well, I'm sure if asked, Billy Collins would say he enjoys a good blowjob. And that's my point. Poetry is about what happens, regardless of what group is telling it, or at least it used to be. My friend dropped it, but still writes dead mother poems, because I guess we don't have enough of those. Another friend said a guy told her after a reading he could have done without the graphic depiction of shit in her poems. My friend recently lost her father and was reading about cleaning his body while he was dying. I guess shit can only be in poems now if you're ironic or a graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop, because most of the poems out of Iowa these days, she said, are shit. I told her I wouldn't repeat that. In fact, people shouldn't write about sex, and gay men shouldn't write about their bodies or childhood or AIDS, and women shouldn't write about their bodies or their periods or breast cancer, and black people shouldn't write about discrimination. Straight white men shouldn't write about baseball. Well, actually, that's true. Latino writers shouldn't use Spanish words in poems unless they translate them. And you should never write a Sharon Olds poem, or a Mark Doty poem, or a dead mother poem, or an incest poem, or a poem of witness, or a poem about childhood or adulthood or God or death. Never write anything contemporary or confessional or autobiographical or political or direct or queer. And God forbid, never write anything without at least one classical reference. In short, never write anything that matters.
So I asked Smith how people respond to his more disobedient poems, and he had some pretty interesting things to say about how defenders of convention and propriety launch their critiques.
I think that's always the first impulse when people are dealing with poems like Fat Ass or Ars Poetica. The first thing people want to do is just try to rip it apart from a craft perspective. They want to immediately say it's not crafted well, it's one note. And my challenge is, will you try working the words fat ass into a poem that short that many times and keep it interesting? You know, there is craft happening in both of the poems that I've read. And again, I always question that thing that comes in where people say, oh, it's not crafted well. I think it's sort of lazy reading, and I think that it is more about the reader than it is about the poet. Because again, I think we can write so many different kinds of poems, so why should that be a poem that I can write?
It's really fascinating the way those critiques might go after Smith's craft, rather than talk about the satirical biting humor in his work. So Smith talked a little bit about that idea of humor.
Sometimes you have to destroy, like you said, the sacred things a little bit in order to have the freedom to say what you want to say. I don't think we laugh at ourselves enough in poetry. I think there's a lot of humor that's out there that we could talk about, but everyone just gets so serious when they start talking about things. And they take themselves and everything too seriously, and I think those poems are, you know, lighten up a little bit.
Ray McManus, author of the books Driving Through the Country Before You Were Born and Red Dirt Jesus, read me a poem that he has referred to as an Ars Poetica. And this one might also take you by surprise.
Here's Ray McManus reading his poem, Toilet.
Your great mouth swung open, ready to eat, ready to swallow gallons. You are known beyond diagrams, penciled schematics, and do-it-yourself manuals, beyond the porcelain fixture. You have been called God, the throne, the seat of compassion, the John. Many kings have died on you, and you sit there ready for more, letting everything go to your head. But consider the rust that eats from the inside out, the constant swirling, the constant pulling you seem to have no control over. Consider the mounds of ass on your shoulders, the stains on your walls, the darkness in your throat. Consider everything said to you is said from the gut.
I think 8th grade teachers should use that poem to teach personification. And I think it's for sure the first time I've heard someone compare writing a poem to going to the bathroom.
I know, and the best part is that McManus told me it wasn't even his idea. Apparently, it was the canonical T.S. Eliot who came up with that one.
What I'm about to tell you is not an original idea. I totally stole this from T.S. Eliot. But, you know, I think sometimes the art of writing a poem and it coming out exactly the way, you know, you want it to, it's like taking a good shit, and there's no other way to say it, and so there's that, but that's not necessarily what it's about. It's not about taking a shit. I would hope not anyway. But it really more is the idea that, you know what is an Ars Poetica, but you know it's sort of this metaphoric expression, you know, for a poet sort of explaining the intimate relationship of writing poetry. And you know, my background and where I come from, that just seemed too prettify it for me. You know, I didn't. To me, poetry is such a useful tool, an apparatus that so many people, especially in South Carolina, don't really see the benefit or value of. But yet, if we were without it, this place would be so much darker. Very much like the toilet, we don't think about it, but yet it's one of the greatest inventions ever. This place for us to put our things, and a flushing that takes place we don't want to know where it goes. We just know that it goes.
Like Aaron Smith, Ray McManus also had a tendency to want to break the rules, and he told Stacy a little bit about that instinct.
The idea of the Ars Poetica, you know, I think the word I used earlier was prettified, and that is not a reality to me. I mean, you know, when you don't grow up in a literary household, you know, when you grow up working class, you grew up in a rural area, and you grew up in the South, there are so many things around you that are inherently ugly, but you find some kind of beauty in them. And for me, you know, the idea of writing poetry isn't so much a beautiful thing. I have people tell me, oh, it must be really nice to be a poet. I'm like, what country are you from? I look for the ugly, I try to make it beautiful. I look at the beautiful, I try to make it ugly. I take the rules for what they are, and if I can break them, I'm going to break them. I'm going to break the hell out of them, because, you know, if I can break them, then I don't think it was a good rule to begin with, you know. but I don't intentionally set out to do it. It just sort of happens, and I think naturally, and I wouldn't want it any other way.
The last poet on the episode today is Alan Michael Parker, whose most recent book, Long Division, is surprisingly metapoetic. Stacy asked Parker about the tradition of poets writing about poetry and how he felt about that convention.
I love that there's this historical gravitas to my art making, and that it's my job to know and to recognize whence my poems come and what their relationship is to history or to the moment. I'm suspicious, though, of the, and this is as someone who's written a full-length collection of very metapoetic work, I'm suspicious of self-consciousness that edges into something cute, or coy, or cute, I would say. And that calls attention to the poet rather than the poem.
Parker's poems are really different in many ways from the other two poets we heard from today, and the poems he's written about poetry put pressure on ideas about poetry in some really interesting ways.
Here's Parker reading the final poem in his book. The poem is called Feeding a Poem to a Horse.
An apple would be better, bitten down like the moon to a crunchy nub, scored with greed. His lips flare in the air from the fence of his teeth, and his tough tail flicks where the flies stay. A carrot would be better than these four-legged lines that flee from me and never meet any sweet little need, so we both might gallop wild and away. I have such an imagined life. I mean, the more that I work on the page, the more that I, in my art practice, the more I write, the more the time spent in my mind outweighs the time spent elsewhere. And there's a discussion of that, of the feeding a poem to a horse and why an apple would be better, or why a carrot would be better. The horse just wants a carrot, not a poem. And the world just wants, you know, to eat and doesn't perhaps need my poems.
Stacy, we've learned a lot about poetry today, how we need it as much as we need toilets, how we don't really need it at all, and that contradiction seems wonderfully telling, you know? It seems like what the poet needs to do to surprise people is break some rules.
And that is why poetry rules, Scott. You see what I did there?
Oh, man.
You like that pun?
I needed that pun about as much as a horse needs a poem.
We want to thank all three poets today for talking to us about their surprising poems about poetry.
And we, as always, want to thank you for listening to Air Schooner.
Air Schooner is a biweekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Eric Jones and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.